Hello, welcome to another edition of The Debate. I'm Kaveh Taghfi. On the nuclear talks between Iran and the permanent members of the UN, known as the P5+1, a breakthrough seems to be on the horizon after years of negotiating. Iran's new nuclear negotiating team, headed by Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif, may be able to get Iran what it was always entitled to based on international law, its inalienable right to civilian nuclear technology without giving up its right to nuclear enrichment. In this debate, we'll discuss the possibilities of reaching this deal and its political ramifications, both regionally and beyond. But how serious and sincere are the U.S. and its European allies in the talks as they derailed at least two earlier agreements? Well, to get answers on that question and lots more, our guests for this edition of The Debate include a correspondent from Geneva, Pedram Khodadadi, also historian and investigative journalist Gareth Porter, who joins us from Washington. And from Newsmax magazine, Stuart Stogel joins us from New York. I'd like to welcome our guests, but first let's talk to our correspondent, Pedram Khodadadi, who's been in Geneva, and he joins us. Pedram, bring us up to date as to what we're looking at. We were looking for a press conference. When is that going to happen? Any new developments also, please give us.
Okay, about the talks today, what has happened about an hour ago, Iran's foreign minister and the EU foreign policy chief, Catherine Ashton, together with the U.S. Secretary of State, they went to talks at the EU headquarters. Iran is presenting the preliminary draft agreement that it has prepared from early morning today to the EU foreign policy chief and U.S. Secretary of State in hope of getting some sort of an agreement. Also, the news we are also having is that the Russian foreign minister his plane has departed. We had two news agencies saying that, the Reuters and the Intarstas news agency. So Russian sources are saying, and Reuters is saying, that the Russian foreign minister's plane has departed for Geneva. Other news we have is that China's foreign minister is also coming here. The talks will most likely will continue tomorrow. Talks with the Russian foreign minister and the Chinese is slated for tomorrow, and that's not going to be happening today.
Very well. Thank you very much for that, our correspondent there, Pedram Khodadadi. But let's get an analysis on this. Let me first start with you, Gareth Porter. Here we have what seems to be an agreement that, according to our correspondent there, there was an agreement that's been drawn up. And right now there's a trilateral between the U.S. Secretary of State, John Kerry, and of course, EU's Catherine Ashton and Iran's foreign minister. What is your reaction regarding these talks and the point that it has reached?
Well, I think what this present point in the talks represents is a very interesting throwback in some ways to the negotiating strategy that Iran used in the 2003 to 2005 period, which was to bargain in order to get recognition of its right to enrich as the primary principle involved, in return for a temporary suspension of some enrichment activities or all enrichment activities at different times during that period. And what I see from the United States side here is an attempt to spin what the Iranians have proposed. This is clearly an Iranian framework for an agreement. There's been no ambiguity about that from the beginning of this process. And I think the United States is now spinning this as a freeze, presenting it as a matter of sort of preventing Iran from moving forward with its nuclear program. And some of the details are being fuzzed over or are being played down by the United States. I think primarily the fact that this, as I understand the Iranian proposal, this will allow the Iranians to continue to enrich uranium, but that any enriched uranium will have to be immediately put into a stream that results in its being transformed into fuel rods and thus being unavailable for any higher level enrichment. And I think that is, again, a throwback from 2003 to 2005, when the Iranians made a similar proposal to the European three foreign ministers, UK, Germany, and France. And at that point, of course, the Europeans were not interested because the United States refused to have anything to do with it. But I think what we're seeing here is a very interesting replay in some ways of what the Iranians were proposing 10 years ago. And I think the United States is now interested in this for their own reasons.
Can you tell us about what those reasons may be, in your opinion, Stuart Stogel?
Well, full disclaimer, I'm a personal friend of Javed Zarif. We go back more than 20 years. And I agree with your previous guest. This is really a throwback to the Iranian position under the Khatami regime. Zarif is basically continuing on from where he left off when he was a nuclear negotiator. So in my view, the Americans have really backed off. The Iranians have won, because if you compare their position now to the position before the Ahmadinejad regime, it's very much the same. And it was funny because this position that the Americans seem to be accepting now was rejected by the Bush administration. So it shows you how much has changed, but how much has really stayed the same.
Well, we talk about this rejection, Gareth Porter, and I quite distinctly remember what happened. It was roughly in 2004, especially when George Bush Jr. came out and cited Iran as being part of the axis of evil. Really was a slap in the face to Iran. What is there to say that the U.S. won't do that if an agreement is reached, which some are saying that it may, going on down the road? Why should Iran continue trusting the U.S.? They have said these sanctions are reversible.
Just to clarify, though, I mean, this happened in March of 2005 was when the Iranians proposed this very interesting concept of basically guaranteeing that any enriched uranium would immediately be transformed into fuel rods. And that's when the Europeans were uninterested. I think the situation is fundamentally different politically in the United States in the following sense, that the Bush administration was really not interested in diplomacy at all. I mean, that was simply antithetical to their idea of what they wanted to do on Iran. I mean, they were essentially aiming at regime change, and they did not want any agreement that would interfere with the policy of keeping the path to regime change open. So this obviously, I think, is quite different now in terms of U.S. policy. Regime change no longer appears to be a realistic objective, and I think the Obama administration certainly recognizes that. So they are, in fact, motivated to try to get an agreement of some kind if they don't have to give up too much. At the same time, I must say that I do believe that there will be a problem when we come down to the next phase of the talks, when the United States wants to use its leverage in the form of the very strong, very biting sanctions on the Iranian oil export sector to try to get far more of a set of concessions that I think the Iranians will be interested in giving up. Or alternatively, the United States will try to get an agreement that will simply not give up entirely the sanctions. So I think that's where the bite is going to be. It's really still the sanctions problem that prevent, if there's going to be something that prevents an agreement, it's going to be that.
Well, we talk about the 10 years that have gone by here, Stuart Stogel, and obviously the political landscape has changed. But what has changed that has brought the U.S. And the allies, namely the P5 plus one minus Russia and China, into the framework that we're looking at right now, which is a possibility of an agreement to be reached?
Well, I think what really has changed is that Iran has moved closer to that red line that Benjamin Netanyahu spoke about, where they can actually produce and effectively build an atomic bomb. So since we are closer to that red line, obviously positions are going to change. And I think the European and the American position at this point is to keep Iran from crossing the so-called red line. The last thing Barack Obama needs now is for literally the Iranian nuclear issue to blow up in his face. So he's going to do everything he can to try and at least stall the situation, at least through election day of next year, when a good portion of the Democrats are up for re-election.
Do you agree with that, Gareth Porter?
Well, I think that's correct. That the main reason that the Obama administration is trying to get some kind of an agreement is the pressure that the Iranian nuclear program's progress has placed on U.S. Policy, on U.S. diplomacy. And I must say, this is a very, very long time strategy that Iran has been using, and it goes back to the early Khatami regime when they were first talking about enriching uranium, when they first had the promise of that capability. They viewed that in large part as a way of leveraging U.S. Diplomacy to get the United States to agree to remove sanctions. Remember that at that point in the 1990s, the Khatami regime was under the umbrella of former President Rafsanjani, who was, of course, identified with that faction in Iranian politics, which wanted to reach an accommodation with the West in general, and with the United States in particular, for economic reasons primarily, because the aim was to integrate Iran's economy into the global economy. This was not a popular view outside that circle of leaders in Iran, and it's still very controversial in Iran, but that was the idea to a great extent that motivated Iran to push its enrichment program forward and to basically accumulate negotiating chips. This is something that has been sadly not understood in the West, and particularly in the United States, for many years. But this has been an essential aspect of the Iranian nuclear negotiating position and indeed of their nuclear program.
Stuart Stogel, we have a couple countries that are not particularly happy about what is going on. Obviously, Israel is one of them. Another one is Saudi Arabia. And Israel has come out, Netanyahu, obviously saying this is a bad deal. It's an historic mistake being made by the U.S. and the international community. What are they so worried about here?
Well, according to both the Saudis as well as the Israelis, the more time the Iranians have to perfect the reprocessing process gives them more experience, not only commercially regarding, let's say, Bushehr, but also the commercial knowledge that is gained through the reprocessing could easily be diverted for military purposes. One thing I should tell you, what Zarif once told me, this whole issue of reprocessing first came about because of the Russians. According to what Zarif told me, the Russians, Iran's original game plan was to send all the spent fuel rods to Russia for reprocessing. According to what Zarif said, the Russians, in essence, held a figurative gun to the Iranians' head, meaning that the reprocessing costs that Moscow was going to charge Tehran was so outrageous, Iran balked at it and decided to go about doing their own reprocessing. So this problem with the reprocessing dates back to the time when the Russians were building Bushehr, and according to Zarif, the Russians were trying to stiff the Iranians for more money. Iran was not going to be blackmailed, decided to do the reprocessing on its own.
That's interesting. Gareth Porter, we're looking at many who are concluding and have concluded for quite some time that this really is about politics. It's not so much the nuclear issue. Diplomacy, Wall Street Journal saying diplomacy with Iran looks promising, but the politics remain tricky. What could be the other reasons that this nuclear program with Iran is something that is not at the heart, but rather on the side, and there are other external issues involved? Are the regional countries perhaps that could be discussed during these meetings? We could talk about Afghanistan or Syria, perhaps. Maybe you can give us a clearer idea here.
Well, I think the other country is quite clearly Israel. That has been a political factor in U.S.-Iran policy really for the last 20 years, ever since the early to mid-1990s. The United States has been adjusting its Iran policy to basically coincide more or less with that of Israel. There has been a very conscious effort to align that policy with the Israeli policy, both under Labor and Likud governments. And that factor is still in play. There's no doubt about that. I think that it is not necessarily strong enough to prevent an agreement, but it is definitely strong enough to cause problems with the United States position when it comes to the sanctions. Remember that sanctions are a product of not just the administration, the executive branch of the United States, but primarily of Congress. And Congress has been, as we've often talked about, as I've often talked about in the past, Congress has been influenced extremely heavily by Israeli, pro-Israeli lobby money that goes into the campaigns of members of the Senate and the House. So that's definitely a political factor that hovers over these talks, that has hovered over U.S. policy for many years. But I would also say that there's been a bureaucratic interest factor for many years, which is that there's a very powerful interest on the part of both the CIA and the military, the Pentagon, in having Iran as an adversary and pointing to what they regard as what they've treated as the nuclear threat, the threat of an Iranian nuclear weapon, because it justifies a lot of programs both in the intelligence community and in the Pentagon. So that is by no means a small factor in the history of this of this policy, which, by the way, I've been documenting for a book that is about to be published early next year.
Very well. What's the name of the book? Do you know?
It's going to be called Manufactured Crisis.
Very well.
Like the untold story of the Iran nuclear scare.
Excellent. Excellent. Very well. Let's take a quick time out here and take a listen to some viewer comments as posted on our Facebook page.
They are serious about the situation because Europe needs gas from Iran and they need to ease the sanctions to get their companies to generate growth in their troubled countries. Europe is tired of hearing Israel's threats and taking them as hostages. I don't understand why the US, Israel, and India can have nuclear power and weapons, but Iran does not. That's ridiculous.
Just a couple of those viewer comments there. Well, let's pick up Stuart Stogel by the title of Gareth Porter's book, soon to come out, Manufactured Crisis. Many have said this is a manufactured crisis when it comes to Iran's nuclear program. Why do you think that is?
Well, because when you say a manufactured crisis, that we could debate that all day, but I think it serves the American purpose because it is able to, they're able to use the nuclear issue as a pretext or as a basis for what Tehran would consider to be a hostile policy. According to what Zarif had told me a while back, it wound up the Supreme Leader was willing more than 8 or 9 years ago to reach in a quote-unquote an accommodation with the Bush administration. But according to Zarif, Tehran was confused as to who represented the true American position, whether that be the neocons with Dick Cheney or the more moderates with Colin Powell. And it was this confusion that led to basically a suspension or a freeze of Iran's negotiations with the United States. Right now, I think both sides are feeling one another apart. I think the Americans will use the quote-unquote manufactured crisis to put pressure on Tehran to try and live up to unofficial pledges it made during the Khatami administration. It winds up, the big difference now is that you've got an Obama administration that wants to cut some sort of a deal but cannot be seen to be kowtowing to Iran. So we'll have to see what transpires, but I think a little gamesmanship going on between Tehran and Washington. In the end, I think some accommodation will in fact be reached long before November of 2014.
Gareth Porter, why did you choose that title for your book?
Well, the title reflects the process that I found in my research, going back to particularly the 2002-2003 period, and then bringing the analysis forward to the present. What I found was a very conscious effort by the Bush administration in Israel to create this narrative, if you will, of a secret Iranian nuclear weapons program. And that narrative included, of course, at one point from 2004 on, the idea that there was a cache of documents, intelligence documents, that had been purloined from a laptop computer in Iran. The computer supposedly belonged to somebody who had been part of this secret program and then was secreted out of the country and brought to a consulate or an embassy in Turkey and then fell into the hands of U.S. government. What I was able to ascertain fairly early on was that this this set of documents are really a fabrication by Israel. If you look carefully, you can see a series of indicators that the material in the documents actually conflicts with documented facts, dates, and so forth. So that became the centerpiece of what I call the manufactured crisis, the idea that that Iran was secretly working on nuclear weapons and was continuing to do so, hiding this from Western intelligence. And of course, that has been playing out for several years now, with the Israelis continuing to plant documents and getting their allies, particularly in Europe, the French and the Germans, and the UK, to carry water for them to make the case that the United States intelligence community was wrong in its 2007 estimate, saying that Iran was no longer working on nuclear weapons. So that's part of the politics that I think inform the process that we've seen in the last few years.
Very well, it's the laptop of deception, as it was called. But thank you very much. I wish we had more time to discuss this. Unfortunately, we don't. I'd like to thank our guest, historian and investigative journalist, talking to us there, Gareth Porter, with his book, Manufactured Crisis, to be coming out. He spoke to us from Washington and from Newsmax magazine. Stuart Stogel spoke to us from New York. Thank you, gentlemen. And thank you for watching another edition of The Debate. Any comments or suggestions, newsroom@pesv.ir is our email address. From Yikov Tachman and the team here in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.